They have been able to have a whole number of different modernization programs either get fielded or on their way to fielding. So they have not only the V-22 and the F-35B coming along, at least to the best that they hope. I think it was described yesterday as cautiously optimistic that things will stay on schedule with the F-35B, but then also the UH-1 upgrades, the AH-1 upgrades, and then the not yet fielded but on its way upgrades to the 53 kilo model. So again, they've got a whole bunch of new capabilities either in the fleet or on their way that puts them in a pretty good position.
So is it just a coincidence or happenstance that they happen to have these capabilities in the pipeline before the bad budget times hit, or do you regard that as sound planning?
Well, I think there are a number of with the Marine Corps, sound planning, of course. But there are a number of senior leaders in the Marine Corps who obviously had been making the modernization of the fleet a priority, and you now have a commandant who's an aviator. You have a number of, again, senior leaders who are aviators who have been shepherding that modernization throughout the Corps over the last, certainly the last 7 or 8 years, if not longer. So it's not exactly a coincidence.
What we heard yesterday at CSIS was at least part of what they're doing is, I believe the way it was framed, is a mitigation strategy. And what I took that to mean is, you know, this is a Marine Corps that desperately wants to get out of the business of fighting land wars, and return to its maritime roots, but it doesn't have enough maritime platforms. Is that a good way of framing it?
I do think that's absolutely fair, and this is where, in particular, the V-22 is so valuable to them, is because it gives them speed and range that if they didn't have it and they didn't have the ships, their ability to perform the crisis response mission, which they have now claimed as their sweet spot, would be very, very different. So, again, General Glavy talked yesterday about an operation that they conducted over 3,200 nautical miles down to Djibouti. That just wouldn't have been possible prior to the V-22, again, in the absence of a ship in the area. So it really has been, I don't think that part was particularly planned. They'd love to have the ships,
right.
But it definitely helps mitigate some of the risk associated with the lack of platforms.
The way he put it, I believe, is if Marines are deployed forward and they're not on board a ship, as they were not in this case, then that is a sub-optimized unit. It's hard for me to tell, you know, just in terms of degree, how sub-optimized they are. I mean, can they do, you know, 95% of their mission, or is it 50% of their mission? I can't really get a handle on that.
Well, I think it depends on the mission, right? From an aviation perspective, I think they can do a fair amount of the mission, but again, it's so dependent on what the environment is that they're going into, what the actual specific mission is. Is it a humanitarian assistance mission? Is it a again, when you're talking about the ability to, I mean, I had some other discussions with senior Marines a few months ago about Typhoon Leaf and the ability of the V-22s to get the command and control element there very, very quickly because there wasn't a ship in the region. And then my understanding is some of the ships that they eventually sent had difficulty with the high sea state. And so the range and speed, again, of the V-22 in particular gave them the ability to turn many, many more sorties than they would have otherwise been able to do. Now, if you've got a ship in a humanitarian assistance disaster relief operation where you can put it even closer than some, northern Philippines to go back and get refuel and more supplies and all the rest of that, then that turn rate could be even higher. And so it's very mission dependent and sort of other infrastructure dependent. But it is far preferable to them to have ships that they can access to primarily as a logistics support, but all kinds of other different capabilities that it offers, and just allows them to expand the full breadth of the Marine Air Ground Task Force. If there are no ships around, it's a lot harder for it to be evenly balanced among the three elements of the Marine Air Ground Task Force, the ground, logistics, and the air, it's going to be a lot more air than anything else if it's if there's no logistics base afloat nearby.
And are they basically banking on this is the way that they're going to operate, you know, kind of over a longer term? This isn't just a short-term budget anomaly. They're just not going to have the ship-based platforms that they would prefer for sort of a long duration here?
Well, I think they are actively examining other platforms that they could utilize for some portion of the mission set. And every Marine will tell you the amphibious, the large deck amphib gives them the most capability without question and the most flexibility across the full range of missions. And so that is their number one priority. But they also recognize that the requirement far exceeds the likely supply, and therefore they are looking at other types of non-traditional, can they embark Marines to get them where they need to be? So there's going on in that area, and they're doing it on various. But you see some of the limitations again in the typhoon relief vessel that was unable to deal with the high sea states, and so there are compromises to be made certainly as you go down that logic chain.
You mentioned that the Marine Corps aviation portfolio is in better shape than most of the Marine Corps areas. What I mean, are there programs that you see in this budget environment as being at risk if something were to go wrong? I mean, the F-35B is the one everybody talks about. It's just right. Recently come off probation, as Secretary Gates put it a couple years ago. I mean, now that they're more optimistic about that program in particular, is their optimism justified?
Well, I don't have any more insight into that than is provided by 60 Minutes and all the other different news sources. I don't know the answer to that question. I know the critical role that it plays in the Marine Corps as a whole vision of how it wants to provide Marine capability going forward. So they desperately want this platform to work. Now, will it? I don't know how much of that they want to believe and how much they really do, and whether, and I don't think they're being disingenuous at all. You know, they have a strong and professional interest in these.
Well, and yeah, and as we heard yesterday, if the Commandant of the Marine Corps is the lead action officer on a platform, it's harder to get much higher level attention than that.
That's indicative of how committed they are to doing everything in their power to make this work out in some sort of way that gets them a capability.
Right. Okay. Last question, I guess, would be beyond the F-35. What, in terms of future acquisitions, what do you see as the most important for the Marine Corps in terms of building this Expeditionary Force 21 that they're trying to move toward?
Well, I think that continued progress in some of the areas that General Glavy talked about of building out the not very sexy but hugely important networks between platforms that totally changes their so that their capabilities are no longer limited to those of the single platform themselves. That's a very big deal for them. But I think most Marines and certainly most ground Marines would say there's a debate right now about whether this year they're hoping that Congress can find a little bit of extra money somewhere or take it from some other lesser priority to finish funding a 12th large deck amphib. So I think there's a lot of Marines with their fingers crossed that will happen. That obviously wouldn't hit the fleet for a little bit, but they're very concerned about the lack of platforms. And again, they will try to leverage less capable platforms to the maximum extent that they can, but amphibious ships make a huge difference in what they're able to do.